And then I went home with some guy and passed out drunk. So don't ask if I screwed him because I don't know. He said I didn't. I'll take his word for it. In the morning, I woke up hungover and feeling guilty and went back to my trailer. Johnny was cold and dead on the floor. There was a half-empty bottle of whiskey beside him. She blinked, and behind her eyes, in that instant, she could see it all again. His eyes were wide open, and he'd fallen from the chair onto the shitty carpet with piss stains on it that they'd never been able to afford to change. And that frozen expression had looked so terrified and in pain. But she knew he was gone, and she didn't know what to do next. And then Janie came in behind her and shrieked and broke the spell. And then, with shaking hands, Savannah had called 911. And then the circus had begun.
It wasn't the whiskey that killed him, though, was it?
They thought so at first, Marcy said. I thought so, too. That he'd drunk himself stupid and his organs couldn't take it anymore. Not after a few weeks clean. But they tested the bottle and then they found it.
Say it out loud, Marcy. For the tape. What did they find in Johnny's whiskey?
Coolant. The word was barely a whisper. Anderson sat back in her chair.
Just like with William.
Mrs. Maddox was found to be not responsible for Johnny Newham's death.
The barely awake man beside Marcy finally spoke.
His death was ruled a suicide, as is clear from the records.
Eventually it was, yes, Anderson said. Although there was a nasty air of suspicion left hanging over you, wasn't there, Marcy? Enough that I imagine the Boise Police Department will be taking another look into Johnny's death now. I mean, what are the odds of two men you know being poisoned the same way, ingesting coolant in a drink?
Marcy's blood chilled. Do you think it was me? You think I poisoned William? Anderson looked down at the yearbook and then back up at her wryly.
Well, it would be fair to say that you might have prior. Even if you didn't kill Johnny, his suicide could have given you the idea. From his death, you knew that ethylene glycol, coolant, disappears from the body quickly. If it hadn't been found in the liquor bottle, then it's possible no one would have known how he really died. Same could be said for William. Another few hours, and no trace may have been found in his system. So yes, it's possible.
But why? Marcy asked, aghast.
Jason was in financial trouble. Maybe he'd told you about what he'd been doing and how he was close to getting caught. With your background, it would be hard to give all this luxury up and live in some shitty condo, waitressing to pay the rent, visiting him in jail every couple of weeks for years. Or maybe you did it for Keisha. Maybe she was the better bet.
Detective Anderson, this line of questioning.
Her attorney at last made a half-hearted attempt to do his due diligence in the room, even though he looked exhausted and just wanted to get home rather than sit in with a murder suspect.
I'm not asking a question, Anderson cut in. I'm simply telling Mrs. Maddox my thoughts.
She turned her attention back to Marcy.
We've seen the texts between you, very close, maybe too close. You two have been hanging out a lot, and my colleagues in London tell me that Keisha preferred women sexually before she met William. Played for both teams, at the very least. She'd been seeing one girl back home who she stayed in touch with when she got here, a Dolly Parker. But she cut off contact with her recently. Maybe she'd fallen in love with someone here. Maybe you.
This was all crazy. If you've seen our texts, then you'll know that I was backing off from Keisha. She was too unstable, too unhappy. Maybe you should try asking her about William again. She had the most to gain from his death. She was always saying she wished he was dead. She stung with her own betrayal. It wasn't Keisha who'd put her here, it was Jason. Her supposed beloved husband had sold her out.
I'm sure we will. But Keisha Radford commented on the coolant right after spending the morning with you. Maybe you'd had time to loosen the cap at some point. You knew about the hidden needles and syringes. You had as much motive and opportunity as either Keisha or your husband.
Maybe I did, Marcy finally snapped. But even if I'd wanted to kill William, even if I'd known about the shit Jason had gotten himself into, why would I be so stupid as to try to murder William with coolant after what happened with Johnny? What I went through with that?
Like I said, maybe you thought there would be no detectable traces left in his body by the time he was found. He was lucky he was found so early.
I know how coolant kills people. Massive organ failure? There's no way that there would be no investigation into that, especially for someone so powerful and influential in this town as William. And then the carton would be found, and that would be that.
True. But the obvious suspect would be Keisha, not you.
Except that someone out there sent that yearbook and note to Jason on the night of the party. It literally arrived a couple of hours before we left, and he demanded I explain everything, which I did. And it wasn't pleasant. He wouldn't even speak to me. Why on earth would I then go to William's house and calmly try to poison him that night, knowing that Jason would think it was me? And more importantly, someone else out there who knew about Johnny would think it was me. I didn't do it. Someone else did. Maybe whoever sent that yearbook to Jason did it. Maybe it's the same person who tipped you off to investigate him.
She sat back in her chair, breathing hard.
And now, Marcy finished. I think I'm done with answering your questions.
52. Mama. Mama had been on the news cussing her out. That's what the guard had said gleefully. As if it would hurt Marcy somehow that she couldn't even rely on the support of her own blood. As it was, Marcy wasn't surprised. Mama was still no doubt pissed that Marcy, Savannah, had disappeared into the sunset with most of Johnny's injury payout and life insurance and never looked back. It hadn't even been that much money. There was no way she'd been going to share it with Mama and her latest deadbeat boyfriend. That money had been her way out after all the crap flung her way after Johnny's death. A cheap, drunk whore, sleeping around as her crippled husband struggled to cope. Left him there to die alone in a stinking trailer, probably heartbroken. Always trouble, that Savannah Cassidy. Like mother, like daughter. Marcy scratched at her scalp. Her hair was greasy after a night of crying and raging and sweating against the scratchy pillowcase. How had she ended up in this position again? She hadn't answered any more of Anderson's questions. Maybe that made her look guilty, but it seemed the detective was already convinced of that. She had too many questions of her own. Were Keisha and Jason still in custody too? Were the police playing a game of eeny meeny to decide which of them to charge? What if they found the syringe in their house? Who would they blame then, her or Jason? It would be her, of course. She was the trailer trash murderess, even if she'd never been charged. And Jason was a proven thieving liar. Mud always stuck. She was pacing the cell again, thinking of the yearbook and the tip-off about Jason, about who hated them enough to do all this, her head an exhausted mess of half-thoughts, when Anderson's sidekick, Washington, came and unlocked her cell.
You're free to go.
His drawl was deep and slow, a Mississippian summer voice, and the words were so unexpected that she didn't move.
What?
You're free to go, he repeated. Come on, I'll take you to collect your things. We're finished at your house, so you can return home.
You're not charging me?
She still hadn't moved, as if half expecting the officer's words to be some kind of cruel joke.
No plans to at the moment. So unless you want to stop paying rent on this cell, I suggest you move.
What's happened?
Marcy scurried after him. He took the stairs two at a time, and her stiff legs struggled to keep up, even as her heart soared. Free to go.
Have you charged someone?
Jason or Keisha?
Not yet,
he said. He pushed the door open and nodded at the woman behind the cage desk, who gave back her purse and cell phone. And then he led her out to the side entrance, ignoring her further questions.
Marcy?
She squinted in the sunlight at the call of her name.
Elizabeth?
Of all the people who might have turned up to take her home, Elizabeth was a surprise. Virginia, maybe, after some gossip, or Iris out of kindness. But Elizabeth? No. What are you doing here? She asked.
Turns out Ms. Glapion saved you.
Thank you, Detective Washington, Elizabeth said. The large black man nodded in reply and gave a half wave before turning back inside. We should get in the car, Elizabeth said, opening the driver's side door. There are news people around the front. What did he mean you saved me? She asked. Elizabeth looked tired. This must have turned her world around too. Did she even have a job anymore? Probably not. The kind of assistance William was going to need was likely to be somewhat more specialized than Elizabeth could provide from now on. More bedpans than trips around the world. It was the coconut water, Elizabeth said as they pulled away. What about it? I asked the police if all the cartons in the refrigerator had been injected with coolant, or just the one William drank from that morning. It turns out they were all poisoned. Marcy frowned. How does that affect me? Because it means you couldn't have done it. Elizabeth looked across at her. At the party, you were in the corridor looking for Jason to say you wanted to go home when I found you, and then we left. We spoke, and then I drove you to your place. You couldn't have gone to the kitchen. It's been a long night, Elizabeth. Marcy's brain was still blank. The coconut water was fine then, because William went and got one as we were leaving, remember? So whoever did it, it was after you left. An image came back to Marcy. The last time she'd seen William normal was as they drove away. He was in front of the house, and yes, he'd been drinking from a carton. Her heart thudded in relief. Anyway, Elizabeth continued. Once Detective Anderson confirmed that, she wanted to make sure you couldn't have come back to the party without anyone knowing, which, given the masks and the number of people, was possible. But it turns out that your neighbor across the street had an attempted break-in a couple of weeks ago and installed security cameras. They don't catch your house, but between theirs and some on a property farther down the block, they could see that you didn't go out again that night. She paused, navigating the streets while Marcy let it all sink in. So whatever terrible things you may or may not have done in the past, Marcy or Savannah or whatever your name is, you didn't do this to William. Look, Elizabeth, it's not my business. I'm struggling hard enough to get my head around all of this, as it is, without getting caught up in things that happened in a different state to people I don't know. My first husband... Marcy started again. I didn't. I'm sorry I said anything. I'm very tired and upset. I'm sure you didn't do, well, that to your husband. The law decided you were innocent, and I've no reason to believe any gossip to the contrary. She glanced over at Marcy. But some people will. People who are fond of Jason. People who like to believe the worst of people for their own entertainment. Be prepared for that. I know, Elizabeth, Marcy said as the tears came. I've been here before. 53. Once they'd parked, Elizabeth hugged Marcy as she let it all out, stroking her hair and muttering soothing words as she cried. And Elizabeth smelled good. No expensive perfumes, just clean and fresh and motherly. Mama had never smelled like that. And Marcy almost regretted when her tears dried up and there was an awkwardness between them again. The sort that came after a moment of intimacy between relative strangers. Elizabeth didn't take up the offer to come in for some coffee. And by the time Marcy had gotten inside, her hard shell was locking into place, and she was regretting the show of weakness. It was strange to be back in the house, knowing that probably only hours ago, the police were still painstakingly going through all her things. She felt violated and dirty, and headed straight to the shower. She was free. They didn't suspect her anymore. Even here, safe in her decadently large bathroom, it was hard to believe the sudden change. She tried to keep hold of her relief, but it was overridden by other concerns. What was going to happen to her now, Even if they didn't charge Jason with William's murder, there was all the financial fallout. Had Jason gotten the money to repay what he'd stolen if his investments with Emmett paid out? What would that mean for her? Would she get to keep what money they had? This house would have to go, but it was probably mortgaged to the hilt anyway. What would she do? It was an endless round of questions she had no answers for, and when she finally got too hot to stand under the water and was fed up with worrying, she dried herself off, and her grumbling stomach reminded her that she'd had no breakfast, and it was now the middle of the afternoon. There was very little in the fridge. There never was much, and what there had been was out of date. And she couldn't face going to a restaurant alone. So she dressed in a pair of old jeans and a hoodie, dug out one of Jason's baseball caps, and put on some shades before heading to the store. Something from the sushi counter would do, and a whole cooked chicken and salad. A tub of ice cream and a bottle of wine. The rest could wait. No one recognized her. And although there was a large TV up on the wall beyond the checkouts, it wasn't showing the news, which was a relief. She had no desire to hear people tearing her and Jason apart. She'd been released, so maybe they'd ease up on her now. She wasn't holding her breath. Gossip quickly became gospel, as she'd learned in Boise. And between her past and Jason's present, they must be the talk of Savannah at the moment. Keisha, the outsider, was probably forgotten. She waited while her items were bagged, and then handed over her credit card, eager and ready to get back to the privacy of her own kitchen. The machine beeped, a little too long, and the checkout girl frowned. "Let me try again," she said. Once again, there was a long beep. Marcy, flushing with embarrassment, muttered something about there being a mistake, and pulled a second card from her wallet. That, too, failed. "Do you have the cash?" the girl asked, studying Marcy with something close to pity. Marcy didn't. She never carried cash, not when she had Jason's credit cards. Did anyone carry cash anymore? The girl nodded her in the direction of the ATM, where she tried again. With each card, a message flashed up telling her to contact her bank. Her pulse throbbed in her ears as the truth dawned on her. The police must have frozen all Jason's assets while they investigated him. She didn't return to the shame of the checkout, but instead left the store by the farthest door and rushed to her car. Surely they couldn't leave her like this, with nothing. She thought about calling Detective Anderson, but decided against it. They'd only just let her go, and ridiculous as it was, she didn't want to draw any unnecessary attention to herself in case that made them change their minds. She had no choice. She was going to have to borrow some money to tide herself over until all this was sorted out. She took a deep breath, swallowed her pride, and then dialed Virginia. "Let's see how far your Christian charity extends, shall we?" As she drove, her whole body burning with shame. There was no answer. She tried again with Iris, and it went straight to voicemail. Were they ignoring her? Virginia might be, but that wasn't Iris's style. She was made of steel. She'd answer, even if it was only to tell you she wasn't taking your call. The club, that's where they'd be. The younger members may flout the rules of no cell phones in the clubhouse or on the course, only by the pool. But the old stalwarts were strict with themselves. Virginia's and Iris's phones would be switched off in their purses. She felt a pang of jealousy that the four of them were no doubt having an early dinner, maybe after visiting William, observers of all the action, not participants. No stain from these events spreading to them. Her heart sank at the thought of walking into the club on her own, but she had no choice. She needed to see her friends. They were the only people likely to lend her any cash. Maybe it would be all right when she got inside, and everyone saw that she was free and innocent. They might feel some pity for her. Catherine, as her name badge declared, one of the interchangeable women in black who took turns at the club reception desk, stared at the screen that was discreetly hidden behind the mahogany counter.
"Can you wait here for a moment, Mrs. Maddox?"
"Is there a problem?" Marcy asked.
"Probably an error."
Catherine kept hold of the sleek membership card between her perfectly manicured red fingernails as she glanced back at an older man working at his desk.
Sir?
It was Ernesto, one of the day managers, and Marcy felt a flood of relief. She knew him well. He'd straighten this out. Ernesto didn't give her his usual smooth smile, however. He came around to the front of the desk before taking her to one side and keeping his voice low.
I'm afraid your husband's membership has been suspended, Mrs. Maddox.
She stared at him, confused. Jason paid the extortionate fees annually, so it couldn't have to do with the accounts being frozen. I don't understand. Ernesto coughed quietly behind his hand, as if it were hard to get the words out, before saying,
We have a policy regarding members who become involved in activities that may bring the club into disrepute. Until this current situation is resolved, the committee has made a decision to suspend Mr. Maddox's membership. I hope you understand.
As you can imagine, this is a very difficult time for me, she said. But I have done nothing wrong, and
sadly, at this present time, only men hold full memberships. Therefore, while your husband is suspended, your associate membership is not valid.
He shrugged, as if it were all out of his hands. Marcy bit her lip to stop herself from screaming obscenities she might regret at the aloof man, and forced herself to smile. I understand. But if you could ask Iris Cartwright or Virginia Habersham if they could come speak to me, I'd be grateful.
Of course, of course.
Ernesto retreated behind the counter and picked up a phone. I'll wait out front, Marcy mumbled. So this was it, she thought as she headed back out into the heat. She'd been ostracized already. Both Iris and Virginia came, their expressions dropping as they took in her clothes, as if her scruffy look was the worst crime committed by their friendship set this week.
Oh, good Lord, Marcy!
Virginia clapped her hands together.
So it's true. They have let you go.
I didn't do anything. I didn't know about anything.
Oh, of course not, honey.
Her words were a flurry of excitement.
I mean, it was quite a surprise to find out about your first husband, but I'm so shocked about Jason. I hear that's true. And now they think he could be responsible for all of it. Let the girl breathe, Virginia. I told you to stay inside. Why don't you go back to the table? Your shrimp will be getting cold.
Virginia wasn't happy, but she did as she was told. Iris waited until she was gone.
That woman loves to know everything.
She paused.
Would you like to come in, Marcy?
No. She shook her head, noting Iris's relief. The Cartwrights did not like gossip and scandal, and now they were surrounded by it. There would be no more Magnolia invites for Marcy. I just need some help. Her eyes blurred again. They've frozen our accounts. I couldn't pay for my groceries.
Of course. Here, take this for now.
Iris rummaged in her purse and handed over $150.
Go home and let me speak to Noah. I'll come to your place in an hour or so with more.
Thank you. Marcy said. Thank you so much. Cash. Of course, Iris carried cash, and thank God for it. At least she could eat today. Iris nodded and turned away. She wasn't filled with the sympathy she'd had for Marcy before she'd been arrested, but she wasn't icy, and at least she was going to help. Alone again, Marcy took a deep, shaky breath and headed for her car. She was halfway across the lot when she heard laughter behind her. Several women had emerged, still in tennis skirts, unnecessary pastel sweaters tied around their shoulders, tanned faces Botox smooth, looking like an ad for a Tybee Island resort. She stared as one face looked her way, dark hair and feline features. Their eyes met, and the woman's smile grew broader, victorious. And then the moment was gone, the woman's attention back on the gaggle of friends slipping into convertibles, no doubt heading for a cocktail somewhere on their way home. Still,
Marcy's whole body smarted. Jackie. 54. Iris brought her $5,000. It didn't seem very much at all, but Marcy accepted it gratefully as they stood in the vast entry hall of her mausoleum of a house. I'm sorry for the awkwardness at the club earlier, Iris said, her hands clasped in front of her. She was beautifully dressed, her hair swept up in a chignon. She and Noah, who was waiting in the car outside, obviously had dinner plans. Life moved on, despite William being hooked to machines and Jason and Keisha locked up. Marcy understood. Iris and Noah were smoothing out the wrinkles that had appeared in their perfect lives by continuing as normal. But in this town, dear, she continued, murder is considered classier than embezzlement. Several of William's clients are club members, so you can imagine. She looked around at the marble stairs and the expensive decor, no doubt mentally totting up the cost that came out of other people's money. You won't remember this, but there was a lot of sympathy and help for Jason after his father got himself into trouble. This is not how people like to be repaid for their kindnesses. And sadly, although it's understandable why you would have liked to keep your past private, that has added another layer of deception that will take some time to forgive. But we have big hearts in this city, and Jason's sins aren't yours. Things will settle down. Until things settled down, Marcy decided later, she was going to have to liquidate some assets. Once, $5,000 would have seemed like a fortune to her, but she was now capable of spending that during a half-hearted boutique browse. Maybe she'd have to get a job, a thought that filled her with dread. The ghost of the stench of diner fat rearing up in front of her, ready to sink into her skin. She couldn't sleep. She'd lain awake, staring at the ceiling in the dark, the sheets beneath her cool, no longer tangled and warm with passion from either Jason or Keisha. The bed was like an abandoned wasteland of love, with only one survivor, a grave not yet filled. When they'd bought the house, she'd loved its vastness. But now the size made her nervous. She found she was listening for unusual noises, afraid of any hint of an intruder somewhere inside. Someone was out there, someone who was determined to destroy Jason and Marcy, and seemed prepared to kill to do so. Would they come here and try to kill her, now that she was so alone? She got up, going to the window and looking out at the street. The house opposite, the house that had saved her, was silent. And the sidewalks were empty, as they always were after midnight. She half expected to see Jackie looking up at her. Everything had started to go wrong when Jackie resurfaced. Could Jackie really be behind it all? If so, what did she want? Surely she wouldn't have gone as far as to poison William to get her revenge on Jason for being rejected. But then history was littered with stories of the revenge of women scorned. But Jackie couldn't have poisoned William. How would she have known where to find the needles Eleanor had hidden away? Could someone have told her? But why? Too many unanswered questions, and for now, she had more immediate concerns. Her mind turned to money again, and she headed to her dressing room. They couldn't take her jewelry, not if she'd sold it. And the same went for Jason's cufflinks and watches, and some of her more expensive one-off dresses. As she started stacking the tiny, beautiful boxes that summed up their affair and a marriage worth of gifts, she calmed down. Even if she sold it at cut-rate prices, she'd have plenty left over after paying Iris back. She reached into the next drawer for her Versace scarves, suddenly feeling a sense of liberation. With Jason, she thought she'd built herself a wall of protective wealth. What good had it done her? It hadn't been her money. Next time, when she married another rich man, she'd make sure she had bank accounts of her own and cash secreted away in case of emergencies. If anyone would marry her. From Jason's drawer, she took out his four watches, two of which had been gifts from her, albeit paid for by him, so she felt no qualms in selling those. And then piled up his cufflink collection. Three pairs were diamond-studded, and none of the others were cheap. When she was done, she got back into bed and stared at the cool square pillow, Jason's pillow, beside her. She thought of all the times in the early days that she'd lain beside Jason, breathless from sex, watching him sleep, just wanting to run her fingers down the firm muscles of his arms and chest. How obsessed she'd been with her handsome man. Then there was Keisha, dark skin against white sheets, who'd lain right here with her, warm flesh, hot, wet mouth, a new ocean of sexuality to dive into. Jason and Keisha. Keisha and Jason. One all masculinity, the other the opposite, yin and yang. As the memories assailed her, echoes of sensation, she felt her body stir. Had Keisha killed William for her, maybe? Marcy had kept telling her she wouldn't be poor again. Was this Keisha's way of trying to secure both their futures, so they could run away together with a fortune? Or maybe she had just been the scapegoat, and Jason had poisoned William to free himself of his debts and save himself from prison. These two people she'd had sex with. Terrible people. The sheet brushed against her nipple and she shivered. Jason and Keisha. Their wickedness began to drive her fantasy, the complete disregard for conformity. And then, as her hand slid down her own body, in her imagination, all three of them were in the bed together, a twisting, panting mess of limbs, each body eager for its own satisfaction. Once she was done, gasping in delight as the orgasm ripped through her, she rolled over and finally fell asleep, and didn't wake up until 9 the next morning, when Detective Anderson rang the doorbell. 55. Marcy was pretty sure Kate Anderson didn't sleep. When she'd woken Marcy at 9, her skin was disgustingly fresh, even clear of makeup. And she had the energy of someone who'd been up for hours. Still, once she started speaking, Marcy woke up pretty fast herself. First, she told Marcy that they now had reason to believe the computer crash at the partnership had been caused by a remotely planted virus. She'd wanted to know how proficient Jason was at computer hacking, or if he had any friends or connections who he might have turned to. All their usual leads for tech crime were staying unsurprisingly quiet. It had made Marcy laugh out loud. Jason? A hacker? No, that wasn't possible. His passwords were too easy to guess for him to be that IT savvy. She'd almost asked why on earth he'd want the crash. But then, as she started to wake up herself, the answer became obvious. To delay the audit. To buy himself time to put money back, or at least make more mess to hide his crimes. No. Even as she pleaded ignorance, Marcy knew that Jason might not have hacked the system himself, but that didn't mean he hadn't organized it. That day when he'd lied about where he was, had he been getting the virus removed? Anderson's second blow was her suspicion that perhaps Jason and Keisha were in it together. Jason had been to London the previous year. He told William the best places to go. Perhaps this had all been a long and elaborate plan. Could he have known Keisha before she arrived in Savannah? Marcy had played her usual distraught southern wife until Anderson left, with the final bombshell that Jason had been charged with several counts of financial fraud and embezzlement and had a bail hearing due. But given that he was also being investigated for attempted murder, getting bail was unlikely. As soon as she'd closed the front door, her head spinning, Marcy had burst into action. Jason still had influence. Therefore, as his wife, so did she. And what was the point of being married to a lawyer if you didn't use your connections to pull a few strings? She needed to ask questions for herself. She needed to know for herself. Could Keisha and Jason be in it together? And so now here she was, at the police station, about to have a visit with her husband, and then with Keisha. The weight of Savannah's legal power having forced Anderson's hand. Marcy wiped her palms on the sides of her pants, suddenly nervous. Tread carefully, her eyes said to Jason as a guard led him into the room. They'll all be listening.
I didn't do it. Poison William, you have to believe me.
Jason's eyes were wide and scared, and Marcy thought he'd dropped some pounds as he sat down opposite her. not even so much as a how are you, honey, before going straight to his denials. It was just the two of them in the interview room. Well, neither did I, but that didn't stop you from telling the police about the yearbook and Johnny. Someone told them that they thought I'd been embezzling money. What? Marcy stared at him. You thought that was me? He shrugged. God, Jason, whether you did it or not, it's wrecked my life. They've frozen the accounts. I've had to borrow money from Iris, and I'm never going to be able to pay for the house, not even one payment. Even if I'd known there was anything wrong, she knew as well as he did not to admit to any wrongdoing in a visiting room. Why would I have told them? Because you don't love me anymore. It was another slap in the face, even if there was an element of truth in it. He sounded like a petulant boy. Me not love you? She snapped. You're the one who's been salivating all over Keisha since she arrived. Marcy knew the best way to get the truth out of Jason was always to be aggressive, put him on the back foot. You know the police think that maybe you two are in it together? Tried to make me look guilty so you could run away into the sunset together? Maybe you met her in London when you were there. Jesus, Marcy. Jason leaned back in his chair. She's a cheap money grabber. I flirted with her to make you jealous. Nothing was good enough for you anymore. I could see you growing colder to me. I wanted our fire back, our passion. When you got so testy about her, it made me unhappy. Sure, it was an unhealthy way to get your attention, but it worked. Also, if I was going to conspire to murder someone, which I didn't, it wouldn't be with someone as flaky as her. You've seen what she's like. But what about the money? That wasn't me. It's all a misunderstanding. He stared at her, a reminder, as if she needed one, that there was no way he was going down without a fight, or at least a plea deal. But what if it was you? That's what the police think. If William found out and reported it, you'd be sent to jail for God knows how many years. Were you just going to sit back and let him? I can't see that. She sighed. But neither can I get my head around the idea of you trying to kill him.
Even if it was true, which it's not, William would never have gotten the police involved, don't you see that?
Jason leaned forward, taking one of her hands and gripping it tight.
He wouldn't let the company get damaged like that. He'd have made me resign, claim some ill health or something. But he would never have let what I'd done come to light. It would have wrecked the partnership and ruined his reputation. People would have thought he was a fool. He was already feeling stupid for marrying Keisha so quickly. He would never have allowed me to make a fool of him publicly as well. Yes, we'd probably have had to sell up and move, but we wouldn't be poor, and it wouldn't have been worth killing him over. Someone trying to kill him has actually made my potential situation worse. You have to believe me, Marcy.
He stared hard at her.
You know me.
He was right. She did know him. And odious as he could be, he was right. He'd have taken his chances with William's wrath rather than kill him and face a possible death sentence. That was too real for Jason. Whereas Jason had been immediately on the defensive, Keisha was the opposite. Even now, when she'd been locked up for nearly the maximum 4 days and was more than likely about to be charged with attempted murder rather than released, her first words were concern for Marcy.
Are you okay?
She said as she took Marcy's hand.
I've been worried about you. About Jason being charged with all that money stuff. What will you do?
Survive, I guess. What else can I do? It was strange being here with her again. Beautiful Keisha, a blend of such fragility and strength, who still, if her racing heart was to be believed, held a tight grip on her.
I'm so sorry I snapped at you at the party. Jason had just gotten my high school yearbook.
I guess your attorney told you about that. Keisha nodded.
He told me. It's so weird. Billy got an envelope that night, too. It was a photo from that voodoo rave thing we went to the first time we, well, you know what we did. In the picture, I was asleep on the grass, and I only had my knickers on. Don't look so worried, you weren't in it. Your arm is, but that's it. No one would know you were pretty much naked beside me.
Marcy flinched at what Keisha was revealing,
But if perky Kate Anderson quizzed her on it, they'd danced at a party and gotten a little wild. So what? What was more important was that someone had been watching them, taking photos.
William lost his shit, Keisha continued.
The final straw for me with him, I think. But what's so odd?
She leaned forward, and Marcy thought that even here, her breath was sweet and warm and fresh, and she wanted to dip her tongue into that mouth.
What's so odd, Keisha continued, is that the police haven't mentioned it. It's gone. Someone must have taken it that night, but who?
Zelda? You thought you saw her.
Yeah, but she would have left it so the police would find it, and she wouldn't do anything to William.
Maybe William destroyed it. He wouldn't have done that. It was evidence against me, that I was a bad wife.
Marcy half smiled, once again irreverent in Keisha's company.
To be fair, you weren't a great one.
I know I wasn't, but I didn't hurt him, honestly. They think I did the conjure ball on the juju dolls myself, but I didn't. I know I wished him dead, I know, but I didn't do it.
Her eyes welled up.
It's all so confused in my head. It's dark magic, I know it is. I kept seeing that old woman with the orange hair. She's something to do with all this. Her and Zelda together, maybe. Remember when we first saw her in the square? She called us ghosts.
She shivered.
I'm so tired of ghosts. I think she knew I was cursed from the boy. Could sense it, maybe. Maybe I've tainted you all with it.
Seeing how Keisha was drifting, Marcy switched topics. She didn't give a shit about juju dolls, whatever they were.
That day you came around and I gave you the Xanax. Where did you go after that?
William came to the house looking for you.
I went out to that place where the party was, Keisha said. The Truman Parkway. I figured I could score something down there to keep me going. The stuff you gave me wasn't touching the sides, and I knew I needed more. I did manage to buy a few pills, oxy supposedly, but it didn't really work. I should have taken the script you offered.
When Jason had gripped Marcy's hand, it was as if he were a drowning man determined to be saved, or to make her drown too. With Keisha, there was just warmth in it, care, love maybe. For all her tears and craziness, Keisha was tougher than Jason. She squeezed her hand back. If Keisha had been scoring drugs that day, then she hadn't spent it with Jason.
God, no wonder they think I'm guilty, Keisha finished. I'm such a mess.
Anderson seems to believe maybe you and Jason did it together. Maybe you knew each other in London before you came here.
I know.
Keisha half laughed.
How ridiculous. Like I could ever fall in love with Jason.
Her face dropped back into sadness.
I'm in love with you.
Despite everything, the words made Marcy's heart soar. Her spirits were still lifted when she saw Anderson and Washington waiting for her in the corridor. Kate Anderson was still riled at being coerced into allowing Marcy to visit, but there was also an amused glint in her eyes.
So you were getting naked with the second Mrs. Radford. Now, that would be quite the Savannah scandal, don't you think? Your fancy legal connections might not have been so keen to do you any favors if they knew about that.
We took off a few clothes while dancing, Marcy said, not pausing as she walked past them.
It's nothing.
The first time we, well, you know what we did? Sounds pretty straightforward to me. How about to you, Washington?
The big man grinned.
I'd watch the movie.
You're disgusting.
Marcy couldn't wait to get out of the station.
Hey, not me.
Anderson held her hands up.
I'm a sucker for a beautiful woman, and she's a beautiful woman. I can see why you would.
A dyke, Marcy thought. Of course she is. No doubt thinking Marcy was just a straight, bored housewife wondering what it was like to act like a lesbian.
So, Kate Anderson said, as she held open the door, the sunlight making Marcy flinch. It seems to me you had plenty to gain by William Radford's death. A lover who'd be a rich widow or getting your thieving husband off the hook and keeping your life of luxury.
But I wasn't there, was I?
Marcy said, her tone like sharp lemons on teeth.
I couldn't have poisoned him.
Anderson said nothing but raised an eyebrow, as if to suggest that this wasn't over yet.
Have a good day, Mrs. Maddox,
Washington said.
Screw you, Marcy muttered under her breath in reply. Screw both of you.
56. In Keisha's dream, she was a marionette. She danced and danced endlessly, her arms and legs pulled this way and that by wires that grew directly out of her skin. She was on a podium under a spotlight in a circus tent, and as she cried out to stop, exhaustion overwhelming her, the audience clapped and called out for more. Uncle Yehuba, the ringmaster, cracked his whip, and overhead in the vast darkness, her strings were pulled harder, the movements threatening to tear her flesh. A face lunged out of the crowd, Billy, laughing and applauding, cut wires dangling from his wrists.
Bravo, bravo, he called out.
Beside him, Auntie Io was on her feet, her whole body shaking as she yelped her delight. But they weren't cheering for Keisha. Their shining eyes were turned upward to whomever was making her dance. She woke in a sweat, her heart racing, scratching at her arms to free herself, crying out for Marcy. She still hadn't shaken the dregs of the dream away properly when her attorney arrived and told her the English police were flying an officer over. They had some questions of their own to ask. When she got back to her cell, she scratched at her arms until they were nearly raw, and yet still she was sure she could feel wires tugging at her skin. 57. Marcy had barely slept all night, a knot of fear in her stomach, her mind going over everything with a fine-tooth comb. Poor Jason, now charged and locked up, and likely to stay that way until he was old. It made her feel strange, and despite her anger with him and her lust for Keisha, she had an awful ache of grief inside for him. So handsome, so charming, so youthful still. All that would be gone by the time he next saw freedom, if Anderson had her way. Love didn't end overnight, she was realizing. She was still grieving for her marriage, for the man she'd fallen in love with, even if he wasn't that person anymore. Maybe he never had been, and she was mourning someone she'd invented. She hadn't poisoned William, and she hadn't embezzled any money. So that should have left her calm, but she wasn't so sure that innocence was a guarantee of safety in this investigation. What if neither Keisha nor Jason had tried to kill William? Keisha wasn't that calculating, and Jason might be a lying thief, but he wasn't brave. This kind of murder required an element of bravery, and she figured he was right that William wouldn't have wanted the scandal if he'd found out what Jason was up to. They'd both been so earnest when they'd spoken to her. No eyes sliding to one side, hiding truths. She'd bet money, if she had any, that they were telling the truth. But if she wasn't guilty and they weren't guilty, then who was? She came out of her final jewelry shop, the diamond specialist, and as she tucked the envelope of cash in with the rest she'd gathered over the morning, the same name flashed in neon over and over in her head. Jackie. It could only be Jackie. The divorce had been bitter, and now she wanted her revenge on Jason and Marcy for what they'd done. In the car, she counted out $5,000 from her healthy bundle of bills and wrapped a band around it to take to Iris at the hospital before starting to reverse the car out of the tight space. She frowned as she looked in the rearview mirror. Something was stuck under the wiper on the back window. Irritated, she pulled the car level and got out to see what it was. When she got close and realized what was trapped under the plastic, her skin crawled with horror. A coarsely made juju doll. She pulled it free, despite her revulsion, the fabric familiar under her fingertips, silk, a red slash of a mouth stitched in. Was this meant to be her? She looked frantically around the parking lot for anyone familiar who might have left it. But all she saw were strangers going about their business, paying her no attention at all. Suddenly vulnerable, she scrambled back into the car and threw the doll onto the floor by the passenger seat, before locking the doors and turning the air conditioning up high so the cool air would calm her down. She grabbed her cell to call Detective Anderson and then stopped. They'd probably think she made it herself to cast suspicion away from Jason or Keisha. She needed more than just this doll before she faced the police again. Jackie, Jackie, Jackie. The name rang like a death knell in her head. Jackie had Creole roots. Isn't that what Iris had said? Did Jackie believe in all this shit too? William and Keisha had dolls made in their likenesses, and now William was half dead, and Keisha was locked up. Marcy didn't believe in the magic, but she did believe in the symbolism, that there was a message being sent in this doll. Was it a threat? A warning? What fate did the puppet maker have in store for Marcy? Death or prison or what? And if this doll was telling her anything, it was that the clock was ticking. She needed evidence against Jackie. And fast. Marcy raced through the hospital so fast she was breathless by the time she reached William's room. Elizabeth was in what Marcy was coming to think of as her vigil chair, a carpet bag on the floor beside her, Moby Dick resting on top of a sweater, and whatever else. Perhaps toiletries she'd brought with her. Emmett was standing behind her, one hand on Elizabeth's shoulder, a gesture of support, as they both watched the shell of a man in the bed. Emmett immediately began babbling some apology for not telling Marcy about Jason's investments, presuming that she'd known, which she didn't believe for a second. He just hadn't cared in that boys' club way. And she wanted to change the subject and save them both the embarrassment. "Isn't Virginia with you?" she asked. It was odd seeing William still the center of attention, but so passive. What conversations had they had around him? Could he hear them talking as if he weren't there, or were dead already? Or discussing the 24-hour care he was going to need, even if they did ever let him out of here? How awful that must be. Did William even like Moby Dick? She tried to imagine Elizabeth attempting to do characters' voices and reading loudly, when maybe all William wanted to do was rage at her to shut up and leave him in peace to sleep. But maybe not. Maybe he cherished every word of company. He should, she thought. People moved on. If he didn't die quickly, he'd be spending a lot of time alone in the dark with his thoughts.
"She was here earlier," Emmett said. "She's at the church helping prepare for tomorrow's special service to pray for William's recovery."
He looked back at the body in the bed, instilling his nasally voice with false good cheer.
"A lot of people will be sending prayers to the big guy on your behalf in the morning, buddy. I fully expect you to be up and tap dancing by lunchtime."
Buddy. How William would hate the lack of respect wrapped up in that word. And she couldn't imagine Emmett's ever having used that mildly patronizing tone around William when he was his normal self. But then William's power was gone now, washed away. He'd been reduced to something less than a child. He would never be William as they knew him again. And whatever he was hearing or thinking, there was nothing he could do about it anymore. It was a horrific thought, and she couldn't bear to stay in the room. "I was hoping to find Iris here. I needed to see her."
"She's getting us coffee, just down the hall," Elizabeth said. "In the family room."
"Thank you." Marcy hadn't realized she'd been breathing shallowly until she was scurrying back around the corner near the reception desk, as if what was wrong with William was infectious, and she sucked in 3 deep breaths before going to join Iris, who looked up as she poured cream into china mugs.
"Oh, Marcy, I didn't realize you were coming in today."
The coffee smelled strong and rich. Nothing about this place was cheap. "I called your house earlier and Noah said you'd be here," Marcy said. She pulled out the bundle of cash from her purse and held it out. "Your money back. Thank you so much for lending it to me."
"That was quick. Are you sure you don't need it?"
Iris looked surprised, as if she'd never expected to see her cash again.
"I sold a few pieces of jewelry. I'm okay for now."
Marcy smiled as sweetly as she could muster.
"But it was so lovely of you to help out. I know it can't be easy after what Jason has done. I feel awful."
Iris softened and squeezed her hand.
"You haven't done anything, Marcy.
And you really didn't have to sell anything to get me that money back. No one is judging you for what Jason has done.
Marcy thought the sentiment was sweet, but found it hard to believe, especially with her own past now in the mix.
Why don't you give me a hand with these cups?
Iris continued.
My arthritis is playing up, and if I'm honest, I don't trust myself to carry them all without causing an accident.
Marcy took two coffees in one hand and went to hold open the door. I saw Jackie's name in the visitor's register, she said casually, as Iris led the way into the hall. It was nice of her to come see William. I didn't think they were close. I've not heard him mention her much.
They weren't overly close, no. Jackie was more Eleanor's friend. You know how it is. The boys play golf and the girls play tennis.
But she would come down from Atlanta when Eleanor was sick, especially toward the end. They would sit and play cards, have dinner. She'd stay over in a guest bedroom, perhaps catch lunch with Virginia and Emmett, and then head home. Toward the end, when Eleanor was sleeping most of the time and a lot of people began to stay away, she'd just sit in the quiet with her. It was a kindness, especially in those last few weeks when Jackie had the passing of her own husband to cope with. She can be very sweet sometimes. So Jackie had been in the house a lot when Eleanor was sick. It felt odd that no one had mentioned it. Had Jason known at the time? Had William told him? Had they all kept it a secret from Marcy because they thought she'd make a fuss? To be fair, they would have had a point. Even though she'd won Jason, Marcy still felt strangely jealous of Jackie. So hearing that her rival was visiting from Atlanta and behaving like a modern-day Florence Nightingale wouldn't have gone down a storm. Right now, though, that didn't matter. What did matter was that if Jackie had spent time with Eleanor in those final weeks, then she very definitely could have known about the needles and syringes with the vial of morphine. Jackie could have poisoned William's coconut water herself. She'd also met up for lunch with Virginia and Emmett, something they'd never mentioned either. So Jackie could potentially have known about Jason's investments and thought they were suspicious. Doors were opening in Marcy's mind, and behind each one, she saw her husband's first wife.
58. Marcy felt the shift in atmosphere as she walked into the church. But even amid the quiet gasps, the roof didn't cave in. And after a flurry of whispers and sideways glances, the natural politeness of the congregation settled back down to the odd word murmured behind hands. Marcy didn't care. She hadn't come to get anyone's approval or even to pray for William's return to full health. She was here for information. Many of the guests who'd been at the party were likely to be here, and no doubt Virginia, down at the front, was taking a mental roll call that all the right people had shown their faces. Marcy didn't listen much to the sermon, only occasionally fighting a smirk or a smile at some glowing recommendation of William's character, his kindness, his sweetness. No mention of his entitlement and bombastic behavior. Making Eleanor hide her grief at the loss of their only son, marrying a much younger woman when his wife was barely cool in the ground, and then trying to break her. And the way he'd always kept Jason dangling on a promise of elevation, to the point that Jason resorted to theft to make it happen. Having Elizabeth at his beck and call every minute of the day. Not exactly a saint. Still, whatever he was, William probably hadn't deserved this fate of hanging in limbo between life and death. But then most people didn't deserve what life threw at them, good or bad. The church was standing room only, but over the hour of gushing words, Marcy had plenty of time to study the congregation. There were the true churchgoers, all in the front rows with Virginia and Emmett, eyes shining and singing loud as they cast their good wishes heavenward. Everyone else simply whined out the hymns under their breath, unsure of the melodies, while making token nods to the prayers. Marcy almost envied that inner circle, the power of their religion, the solidarity it gave them with their fellow believers to automatically belong somewhere, the sense of community, of invisible bonds. She'd seen it with the women who helped at the mission, united by worship and the need to serve their God in all they did, to help each other. It was anathema to Marcy. She figured religion had to get you when you were young, before cynicism set in. With her upbringing, if Mama's efforts at dragging her through childhood could be called that, cynicism had set in way before Marcy could even spell the word. Once she'd spotted her, it was hard not to just stare at Jackie. The brunette, hair in an elegant bun, was standing over to the right, about halfway back, not part of that religious inner circle. Jackie and her bitterness. Jackie and her revenge. Jackie the crazy bitch. She hadn't glanced back, but she wasn't fooling Marcy. She knew Marcy was there. Jackie might think she was playing with Marcy, but Marcy was onto her now. After seeing Iris the previous day, Marcy had gone home and called her old high school, asking the secretary if they kept copies of past yearbooks. They'd put her through to the librarian, who'd laughed, surprised, when she'd said she was interested in spare copies of the 2004 edition. Apparently, a woman emailed a while back asking for the same. She remembered because she never got requests for that far back. Not often. People move on, don't they? Marcy's stomach had been in her throat when she'd asked if the librarian had a copy of the email, but she hadn't. The woman must have come and collected one, though, because there was one fewer than there had been in the storage room. She must have come in, maybe during the vacation when there were only office staff in. The librarian promised to ask her colleagues, but wasn't sure she'd get an answer. It was several months ago, and in high schools, everything was always such a blur, wasn't it? All that youth racing around. Once she'd gotten rid of the wittering woman, Marcy had almost called Anderson straight away to share her theories, but stopped herself. She needed more. "Hey," she called out as the doors opened and the crowd spilled free. "Julian!" The party planners were hurrying off toward their car, heads down and faces like thunder. "Julian! Pierre, wait!" Pierre stopped, peering over his sunglasses, and waited for her to catch up.
"Well," he said, "I didn't expect to see you here."
"I thought I should show my face," she said. "I don't want people thinking I'm hiding. Do you want to get some brunch? My treat. I'm not going to lie. I'm in need of friends." She might be deep in the shit long term, but for now she was cash rich. "And obviously," she winked irreverently at Pierre, knowing how to play him, "I have all the gossip."
"Alessi's," Pierre said after a moment. "I could murder one of their martinis."
"Let's steer clear of the M word, shall we?"
"Deal. As long as you tell us everything about what it's like in the real world of Orange is the New Black."
"Oh, you're funny," Marcy said.
"Come on," Julian said, unsmiling. "Let's get out of here."
She didn't wait for a showdown with Jackie, or to chat with Virginia or Iris, or any of the women who kept glancing her way as if she were radioactive, but got in her car and followed the boys out of the lot. If anyone knew about people's movements that night, it would be these two. For all their flamboyance, they were professionals and would have been sober and observant all night. The martinis were already on the table when she slid in to join them at the booth.
"You said she'd be there," Julian was saying. "What a waste of a morning. You know I can't stand churches. They hate us in there." "That's not true. They all love us, and hate is a strong word. They're confused by the gays they don't know, which means they probably don't hate them at all."
"You thought who'd be there?" Marcy said.
"Elizabeth," Julian said. "We're still owed a lot of money from the fiasco of a party. The balance. Although to be fair," Pierre added, "the scandal has got everyone trying to book us. Who would have thought attempted murder would be so profitable?"
"Elizabeth seems to have set up camp at the hospital," Marcy said. "Like a loyal dog dying with its master." She smirked. Julian and Pierre, well, mainly Pierre, unleashed the bitch in her. "But I guess you may have to wait a while until things are settled down. I have no idea who can access William's money at the moment, if anyone can. Must be a bit of a mess." "I sure can't access mine," she wanted to add. "Are you guys broke?"
"Oh, hell no."
Pierre looked aghast. Don't even say that word. That's not the point.
Julian drank half his martini in one swallow.
I didn't want to do another of William's parties in the first place, not for a second wife, however nice she might be. He always made us feel second rate, and like we owed him.
Pierre leaned across the table.
In case you missed it, here's the recap. Eleanor gave us some money when we were starting out because she loved Julian. He was her link to Lyle. And William hated that, Julian cut in. But he could never say anything about it, because then he'd have to face the truth all over again.
Marcy frowned, puzzled. What are you talking about?
Lyle, of course, Pierre said. He was gay. He was Julian's first love. Why do you think he joined the army? To try to impress his daddy, to be a man in his eyes. Eleanor didn't want him to go. She knew he was only joining because William was so ashamed and disappointed in him, and he wanted his father's approval again. And as if there are no gays in the army.
Pierre rolled his eyes.
I mean, seriously, they all work out, and they all wear uniforms. The army is basically the goddamn village people.
Marcy sat, stunned.
Eleanor didn't care about his sexuality. She just wanted him to be happy. But William, as we all know, isn't someone to be argued with. So Lyle went off to the army to make his daddy proud. And then he died, and the heartbreak very nearly killed Eleanor. Just because William couldn't stand the thought of a gay son.
Wow. It was all Marcy could muster. So much family history she didn't know from back when the ghosts were breathing.
And you wondered why I have no real desire to organize parties for William Radford IV, Julian said.
Parties. This was her inn. Well, I don't think you have to worry about organizing another one for him, do you? She smiled, trying to lighten the mood. I left early, thankfully for my freedom, as it transpires.
You little two-name jailbird.
You're so funny. But thank God for that headache. Although I almost came back when I saw Jackie turning up as I left. I thought she might be making a play for Jason, now that she's a widow. Stupid, I know. And actually, given everything that's happened since, I should have let her have him.
Straight men are such dogs, Pierre said. But you shouldn't have worried about that. I saw them briefly talking, but he didn't look very pleased about it. And I saw her later, Julian said. Mask off and face like thunder. She'd gone upstairs, said the bathrooms were all in use downstairs, although I'm not sure they were. Plus, we'd arranged those rather gorgeous temporary restrooms outside that looked like safari yurts, across the garden from the catering truck.
She'd gone upstairs. Had she been in Eleanor's bedroom stealing a needle, then done what needed to be done?
Now, let's get back to the important stuff, Pierre said, ignoring the brunch menu but waving the waiter over for another round of martinis. We need to know all about this first husband of yours and what happened there. You're like a phoenix.
His grin was razor sharp as he waved his hands dramatically skyward.
Risen from death in a trailer park to these dizzying heights.
And it was a long way to fall back down again, Marcy thought, as she resigned herself to another hour or so of grilling. But at least she'd found out what she needed. And no more martinis if she was going to speak to Detective Anderson this afternoon. Can you get her to call me? Marcy said into the hands-free as she put the car into drive. Marcy Maddox, it's urgent. I have some information on the attempted murder of William Radford. Kate Anderson was out at the airport, apparently, but would be back in 30 minutes. Marcy hung up. Maybe that wasn't so bad. It would give her time to get home and make coffee before presenting her case. Despite her resolve not to drink more, brunch had been entirely liquid, and the heavy storm clouds gathering overhead weren't helping shake the two martinis away. But her adrenaline was firing her onward as she mentally listed all the evidence, circumstantial though much of it was, she had against Jackie. Jackie had been ridiculously bitter all through the divorce. She didn't like William and had visited Eleanor plenty when she was sick,
so could easily have known about the needles and syringes in her drawer. She'd wanted Jason back, and he rejected her. A woman had emailed and asked for a copy of her old high school yearbook. That could have been her. If Jackie had been following Marcy, she could easily have taken the photo that Keisha and William received the night of the party. But what for? Maybe to make him pissed and snappy at people, cause him to argue with Jason and make him look guilty? She knew Emmett and Virginia and could have known about Jason's heavy investments and guessed at money problems. Finally, Jackie had been upstairs on the night of the party to go to the bathroom and could have taken the syringe then, before poisoning the coconut waters. Marcy sat back in the seat, her heart racing. There was definitely a case there. Jackie hated Jason and Marcy. Everyone knew that. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. If they arrested her, would they let Jason and Keisha go? Would Jason get bail? Maybe they'd wonder if Jackie and Jason were in it together. Her stomach tangled in knots at the thought of both her lovers being freed. Who did she want to see the most? Jason was a lying bastard, but he was her husband, and maybe there was a way they could wriggle out of this financial mess if he wasn't under suspicion of murder. Maybe she, at least, could keep this life while he did whatever time they gave him. Perhaps the status quo could be maintained. But what about Keisha? She was wild and unbalanced, but she did something to Marcy's insides. She made Marcy crazy in the way Jason used to. But could she stand the scandal of coming out with Keisha and starting again somewhere? Did she really want to live the kind of life Keisha would now she was in her mid-30s? She was still turning over her limited options when a flash of umber on the sidewalk ahead distracted her. She stared as she drove by. The tall, old black woman, cane in hand, was shuffling along the street around the corner from Alessi's. Marcy had passed her in a nanosecond, but she was sure, when she looked in the rearview mirror, that as her car drove by, the old woman had paused and beaten the ground with her stick 3 times, her head thrown back in laughter. Was this another of Jackie's games? Was she trying to send Marcy as mad as she'd driven Keisha with all this voodoo stuff? So that when the police finally came for Marcy, which she was pretty sure was the plan, she wouldn't be thinking clearly? Not me, Marcy thought. I'm ahead of you, Jackie. You won't beat me. 59. Jackie? Marcy almost dropped the champagne glass she was holding. She'd still been a little squiffy from the martinis, but the phone call with Detective Anderson had gone so well, she was sure she had something to celebrate. But now, with Jason's ex-wife standing on her doorstep, she realized she'd been premature. You thought I set Jason up because I wanted him back, and he rejected me? Jackie rested one hand on her hip, exasperated. Jesus, not in a million years. You'd better let me in. She nodded at Marcy's glass. And we're going to need something stronger than that for what I have to tell you. Marcy didn't move. Detective Anderson told you about our call? After everything you've done?
I haven't done anything, Marcy, except up front tell her to look at Jason's finances, but not because I wanted him back. Trust me, I'm not your enemy. Now let me in. We don't want to do this on your doorstep.
Marcy stepped aside, nodding Jackie through to the kitchen while noting how effortlessly elegant she looked, even in jeans and a sweater. Born to this life. Marcy felt dowdy beside her, even though she had a 10-year youth's advantage over Jason's first wife. Marcy couldn't help it. She hated her. And Jackie had been the tip-off about Jason. What else had she done?
So what is it you've got to tell me?
Marcy poured her rival a glass of champagne, ignoring the earlier request for something stronger. She didn't want Jackie in the house any longer than she had to be. It had to be Jackie behind all this. It had to be.
Let me ask you something.
Jackie perched on a stool at the kitchen island and studied Marcy, thoughtful and cool as a cucumber.
When you found out he was stealing from client accounts, did he say he'd done it for you? He was trying to keep you in love with him, trying to give you everything you wanted.
Marcy opened and closed her mouth as she looked for words of denial that she couldn't find.
How do you know that?
The world was spinning again, turning events once again on their head. She knew the answer before Jackie spoke. Because he'd said it before.
How do you think I know? He used all that bullshit on me a long time ago.
Jackie sipped her champagne. When I was young and stupid and should have seen through it. She shook her head, annoyed at her younger self.
When I came back for Eleanor's funeral, she was buried in those beautiful South Sea pearls of hers. Elizabeth told me how she'd gotten so confused she'd lost them, and then Jason found them somewhere. That was the first warning light in my head. Hugely expensive pearls going missing around my darling ex-husband. I know Jason. He probably stole them on a whim and then realized he wouldn't be able to sell them in town, so put them back. When I heard about this big new house and his plans for buying William out, and Emmett told me he'd been making some high-risk investments, I knew it. I knew he was doing it all over again.
Doing what? Marcy pulled up a stool of her own. What now?
Everyone in town is saying like father, like son about what Jason's done. Bet you've even thought it.
Marcy couldn't argue that, so she stayed quiet.
But it's not like his father at all. Michael Maddox was a good man, a kind man.
She smiled wryly.
The kind of man William might have called weak. He certainly called him weak in the aftermath, when he wasn't around to defend himself.
But Michael stole money from his client accounts, Marcy said. Jason told me all about it. He was going to prison, she insisted. And so he killed himself.
Michael didn't steal anything.
Jackie looked up. Jason did.
But he couldn't have.